welcome back to HealthLink On Air, brought to you each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. This is Tricia Torrey, Every Patient's Advocate. I'm here with Dr. Gregory Eastwood from Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities, and Dr. Gregory Threep, Professor and Chair of Upstate's Department of Pathology and past President of the County Medical Society. We're talking about tort reform, and gentlemen, just as we were ready to take the break, we had sort of covered the money aspects of tort reform, which, again, I see as more about lawyers, I think. I want to talk about the roots of tort reform, which really is medical malpractice. And we talked a little bit about defensive medicine leading to expanding to the cost of all of this. But let's talk about exactly what malpractice is, because I think in many ways, we patients in particular have begun to confuse mistakes with bad outcomes. You know, there are going to be bad outcomes, mm-hmm. but that's really kind of different from mistakes. Explain the difference, if you will, Dr. Eastwood.
Well, it's a huge area, and we lump it all under medical malpractice. But bad outcomes happen for different reasons. One major reason is this whole idea of science, and medicine is a science-based discipline. Science says that there are things we just don't know about. And
yes.
I think everyone can relate to that. We're exploring space, we're exploring the molecule, and so on. And so in medicine, there are things we just don't know about. And sometimes mistakes or bad outcomes occur because we just don't know.
Well, let me just add to that, too. I think that anytime a patient and doctor enter into a relationship, whether it's going to be to give birth to a baby, whether it's going to be surgical, whether it's prescribing the right prescription drug, I don't think any doctor or any patient ever expects a mistake or a bad outcome will happen. Now, there are percentages. I have informed consent as a patient. I'm told that there's a 90% chance that my surgery is going to come out all right. It never occurs to me that I could be part of that 10%. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a violation of my expectations,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. Well, some of this has to do with a general unfamiliarity with percentages and risk,
sure,
that sort of thing.
And again, we don't know always.
That's right.
Yeah.
So one reason, of course, we don't know about something. Another is that just this chance or unpredictability. We know with almost everything that's done in medicine and surgery and related specialties that there is a chance of something going wrong. And that's an expectation, but the chance might be 1% or it might be 30%.
Well, sure. And just as I said, I never expect to be part of that chance that something will go wrong.
Another thing, though, is communication failure. Sometimes patients don't understand. Sometimes doctors don't tell them or others don't tell them to expect certain things. And then that sets up this situation where, I wasn't told about this.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes frustration and anger
and
so on.
Sometimes patients don't hear.
They may
or
not
sometimes
hear.
Patients
right.
aren't so honest.
Or they may not ask the right questions, too. There's a responsibility that
yeah.
patients have.
It goes in both directions. You know, you tell me to quit smoking. And I'm supposed to quit smoking for 48 hours before my surgery. And I tell you I did, mm-hmm. but I lit up this morning just before I came to the hospital because mm-hmm. I was nervous.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there are communication problems in both directions.
Sure. And then the final reason, at least the last reason I'll talk about, is frankly that there is ineptitude. Sometimes physicians are not as capable as they should be, or they're careless, or something like that happens.
Dr. Threep, what you know about medical malpractice and lawsuits, how often do these bad outcomes in these lawsuits result from one of those reasons that Dr. Eastwood just described versus somebody really doing something wrong?
I think the statistics the AMA gives, you know, 75% of the time there's an action, the patient gets nothing.
Okay.
Because the doctor has not been found to be at fault.
All right, so you're talking about a lawsuit has been filed, and it's in effect, what, a frivolous lawsuit? The patient didn't get anything, therefore it was not
negligence couldn't be proved.
Oh, okay.
Okay, because there's negligence and there's bad outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Negligence
and
has
that's
to
what
be,
Dr.
Has
Eastwood
to be
was describing.
Proved.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Okay. And that's not always so easy. It particularly isn't as easy as you see on the TV commercials.
Oh,
if you've
yes.
been hurt on the job,
yes.
call me.
Yes.
If you've been hurt in an auto accident, call me.
Yes.
It's not that easy.
Yes. You know, there are a lot of things that I think transact between the doctor and the patient that Patients end up signing informed consent forms, but they aren't reading them necessarily. Doctors think that they've covered everything because they've done this same conversation with patients 10 other times before they've walked through the door, but it might be the one thing they forgot, or it could be the thing they said that the patient doesn't remember. I think a lot of those malpractice suits really are what you're talking about, that 75% that there's not something. But patients somehow have this expectation that no matter whether it's somebody's fault, they still need to find somebody to blame. That's what a lot of this is, isn't it, Dr. Eastwood?
It is. I think we're in a blame-oriented society. And also, if something bad happens, we want to put it right in some way or to be compensated. And maybe this is a good time to talk about some alternative methods of how we could, as a society, decide to address these things.
I do want to get into those, but I do want to cover one thing, and that is, and it's something that I've run into myself, and that is the whole idea of apologies. Because of the threat of lawsuits, because laws are written the way they are, because of the way medical malpractice goes, physicians don't apologize when a mistake has been made. I have to ask you, both as physicians, if you had made a mistake, wouldn't it drive you crazy that you couldn't? That somebody was telling you not to?
You know, it may sound counterintuitive, depending upon which side of the issue you're on, to apologize, because you would think, well, the physician might feel if I apologize, it's just going to, first of all, alert the patient more to this possible mistake. On the other hand, apologies do a lot.
They do.
We know that in other areas of human behavior and interaction. And we know also from studies that have been done in so-called malpractice issues that when the physician apologizes, it really diffuses the problem.
It does. You know, the University of Michigan did a study a couple of years ago, and they showed that when a physician apologized, it cut the percentage of lawsuits to 30% of what it had been the year before. And now they actively teach their physicians to apologize. There are also 32 states that have laws that allow physicians to apologize without admitting fault. But again, it cuts the number of lawsuits. New York State is not one of them. Mm-hmm. I find that very interesting.
Well, you talked about teaching physicians. I just have to interject here that in our medical school here at Upstate, that's part of our curriculum.
That's good to hear.
We talk to the medical students about that.
That's good to hear. Let's switch then to what you raised just a few minutes ago. If we know that lawsuits are horrendously expensive, and yet we know that it's fair sometimes when there has been real true medical malpractice that somehow a family or a patient be rewarded, how can we balance that out? Dr. Threet, right now it seems like we hear about these huge rewards. Is that some kind of I hope that there will be some medical malpractice. I'll go sit on a beach in the Caribbean for the rest of my life.
I debated the president of the Trial Lawyers Association about 6 months ago. What we have to understand is there's two components to an award after a lawsuit. One is the economic damages. For instance, if I accidentally cut your hand off, you can't work the rest of your life. Well, we calculate how much that loss of the hand is.
How it would impact my income for the rest of my life?
Right.
Okay.
And you get part of the award is the economic damages you suffered as the result of me cutting your hand off.
All right. Well, let me just interject there. Does that mean that somebody over the age of 65 who's now retired doesn't have any?
Gets less. Five-year-old gets
a whole lot more.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting.
Right. But then on top of that is what they call pain and suffering.
Sure.
And if you can prove pain and suffering, okay, then that's trebled, okay? That is a huge part of the award. There are some states like California and Texas where the pain and suffering is limited, capped at like $250,000.
Now, does that mean then that for the doctors who practice in those states, their malpractice premiums are a lot less?
Much less.
And therefore, I've got to guess they have more doctors.
The governor of the state of Texas bragged 2 years ago about after Texas passed their cap on non-economic awards.
Okay.
So Texas, in other words, had 5,000 physicians registered in the first quarter to New York's 180. New York has more medical schools.
Yes.
Our our medical students are going there to practice.
And you know, you can't blame them. I mean, if I'm an OBGYN in particular, and I've got my choice between practicing in a state where my malpractice insurance is $150,000 a year versus $25,000 a year, where am I going to practice? Yes. Exactly. And I think that's important for people to understand. It's not that there won't be economic recompense in some way. It's that these huge awards are the ones that get alleviated. Dr. Eastwood, what do other countries do?
Well, they have systems like this where there's a tribunal or some committee that decides on the merits of the case, and according to their laws, they award a certain amount of compensation.
And they do that through the government, not through lawyers?
Well, of course, other countries do a lot of things in terms of health care that we don't do.
That we don't do.
And this is part of that.
Yeah. You know, this whole question...
And that happens with asbestos cases.
Ah.
There are asbestos panels who... decide on
in this
award.
Country
in this country
in this country
that's the way asbestos cases are handled. So it can be done,
and we already have a record for how it's being done and done successfully,
right.
You know, it does bring this whole medical malpractice tort reform kind of into a little better focus for all of us. We heard about this during healthcare reform. That's kind of where we started, and I expect we will hear more about it, won't we?
We will. It's not included in the current healthcare reform package. But we'll get to it.
Yep,
in this country, we'll get to most of the problems that we have to deal with sooner or later.
Well, Dr. Gregory Threet and Dr. Gregory Eastwood, thank you so much for your time this morning. I think we all understand tort reform a little better than we did before, and medical malpractice as well. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And listeners, we will be back in just a few moments. This is Upstate's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.